So I started to say, well, why is Jesus associated with this particular brooch? And I moved the pin backwards, and I moved it away from one of the precious stones, and I swung it right the way around, but you can't go all the way around. You can only move it 144 degrees. And I thought, that's interesting, because that's a number used in the Bible and the Book of Revelation, and all the ancient sun-worshipping civilizations use the number 144 because it represents 144,000 that will go to heaven when the world ends. Yeah, that's what it says in Revelation. So then I looked at the top of the brooch, and it's embellished with a double zero, like a Vesica Pisces, two circles overlapping. So I thought, 144,000, and in the middle of the pin, there's another zero shared by two hearts. So there we had 144,000. So I thought, well, that's interesting. And I thought, what am I actually doing when I measure this angle of 144? If I move this enormous pin away from the stone on the left, swing it around, it's 144 degrees before I hit the stone on the right. And then it suddenly dawned on me. He who withdraws the sword from the stone will become a king in this life and the next life. Now that is written on King Arthur's tomb in Glastonbury. King Arthur, here lies Arthur, the king that was, the king that will be again in heaven. So it seemed to me that the Arthurian legend was actually fact based on this Tara brooch, because it seems to me that Arthur must have broken the code of the Tara brooch, realized it had the number 144,000 encoded into it, and he was one of the 144,000, therefore, that would become a king in heaven. Now, imagine yourself as Arthur in the year 450 AD. You've got a sack. In the sack, you've got the Tara brooch. In the same sack, you've got the Ardar chalice, because they're made by the same hand. Now, if the Tara brooch tells you that it was made by Jesus, then surely the cup which is alongside it is likely also to have been made by Jesus.
That would be a good assumption.
Now, if we look at the 15th century paintings, we see King Arthur, one particular fascinating picture, it's called The Lives of Lancelot by Gautier de Mope. It's a 15th century painting from a book in France.
Is that in your book?
It is in the book in colour. Okay. It shows King Arthur seated at the round table with his nine knights worshipping the Grail. And either side of the Grail is a dragon, two dragons. Now, as well as the carving of the maze-like pattern on the Ardar chalice, there's an engraving of two dragons. King Arthur in the painting is shown worshipping the Grail, radiating light. And if we turn the Grail upside down, we have a one-inch quartz crystal. Quartz, as I say, is synonymous with the sun, which radiates light.
Right.
In the painting, King Arthur, remarkably, is shown twice. Once at the round table with his nine knights, but in the left-hand window, outside in the courtyard, Arthur is there pulling the sword from the stone.
Oh, there he is. Yeah, I see this now. He's in two spots, huh?
He's in two spots at the same time.
So what's the significance of that?
It was the pulling of the sword which allowed him to find the Grail. It was the decoding of the Tara brooch which persuaded Arthur that the cup must be the Holy Grail. So what does he do? He carves it with the names of the 12 apostles as far as he could know in the year AD 453. In AD 453, Britain had just been occupied by the Romans. They'd just left. Everybody spoke Latin. So Arthur engraved the cup with the 12 names in Latin, not in Latinized Greek of the medieval monks at Lindisfarne. And he got one of the names wrong. The Romans knew all about St. Paul, but they didn't know about Matthias, because that was in the Vulgate. And the Vulgate wasn't adopted until the 7th century, even though it was commissioned by St. Jerome in AD 380. It was not known by King Arthur in AD 453.
Is that why that Arthurian character was in the Indiana Jones movie, the Holy Grail, the search for the Lost Ark and everything else? Remember that one?
Well, I mean, it's all the same. It is, yes. It's all the same legends. Now, if we look at one particular painting by one of the Pre-Raphaelite paintings from England, and the Pre-Raphaelite movement was from about the latter half of the 19th century, the first part of the 20th century, finished about 1915. It was a group of artists who longed for the bygone age of romance and chivalry, which they believed was enshrined in the Arthurian legends. And one of the painters, Edward Burne-Jones, painted the ceiling of the chapel of Oxford University with the Holy Grail stories. He also made six tapestries and showing the pictures of the Holy Grail as he saw it. Now, these guys were Freemasons. Now, we know they were Freemasons because they call themselves a Brotherhood. So their knowledge had been handed down from their parents and from the pyramid makers before them through King Solomon and the long line of Freemasonry with all of these secrets of the sun, how to get to heaven and so on. And in one particular picture in the book, there is one of Edward Burne-Jones's tapestries. There's an inscription on one of the chairs, and the chair is the Siege Perilous next to Arthur, and it's a Latin inscription. And when we decode or translate the Latin inscription, it says that this chair can now be occupied because the cup of light has been found.
Maurice, did the chalice have any special powers to people who touched it?
It may well have special powers because it does radiate light. And we know that quartz, it's what happens is it's fantastic. When we start to examine, it's wonderful actually. It all comes from different directions. How do I know so much about this cup? Well, as luck would have it, in 1974, the National Museum of Boston said, how can we show people just how good science is in archaeology? Let's analyze an archaeological artifact to demonstrate just how clever we are. So they scour the inventories of the museums around the world to rip something apart to show how clever they were. And you know what they picked? They picked the Ardar chalice, and they ripped it to pieces. One piece at a time, they took it to pieces. It's got 354 pieces, the number of days in a Druid year. Druids were Celtic priests. They used 12 lunar months of 29.5 days for a year. The Ardar chalice has got 354 pieces. It's held together by one square bolt that is spread apart into a pin underneath the quartz crystal. A square bolt is the square of the Freemason. It represents purity. Some of the studs in each, just beneath each of the handles on either side are subconical. The scientists have taken x-rays of the cup, they've taken silver samples of the cup, they've taken pictures of each of the 354 pieces. Some of the panels are woven with wire thinner than a human hair, gold wire. They're decorated with swastikas and reverse swastikas, that the entire super signs of the sun, which we find in the tombs of the Mexicans, the Egyptians, the Peruvians, that even the Chinese, is all contained in this cup, the Ardar chalice, which has to be the Holy Grail. There can be no question about it whatsoever.
The craftsmanship is incredible.
It's absolutely beautiful. And what we do when we look at the start to decode each of the pieces, you know, once I've located this as being identified it, given that it must have been engraved by Arthur, who carved the mark of two dragons, exactly the same mark that is on the tomb of Lord Peikau in his tomb in Palenque in Mexico. It was the same picture of two dragons. It's called a Tau cross, T-A-U. It's the Greek letter T. The Greeks adopted it after the crucifixion to represent sacrifice, because Jesus was sacrificed on the cross.